cannot drink from a mirage, but you can drown in one.
I am bandy-legged and saddle-sore from riding roughshod over so many conventions. These recurring moments when a great wave of black nausea, dragon's breath, licks across my mind. Women are never stronger than when they arm themselves with their weakness.
Hello, I'm Saul Wordsworth, author, musician and journalist. Welcome to this, the fourth bonus episode of Devil in the Wilderness.
Watch a cock.
And The Search. For Spratt. There's an awful lot to get through in this episode. All kinds of wilderness news, if you will. I would, however, like to start with a small beg your pardon.
Sorry, Mama!
I mentioned in the previous episode, released 2 months ago now, that The Search for Spratt... enough already. Would be with you in a couple of weeks. This was a fairly basic error on my part. My day job involves some podcasting, and we are always at pains not to timestamp episodes, and also not to overpromise. I overpromised, and thus underdelivered.
That was stupid.
However, there are reasons I was waylaid. Most notably, the cyber attack launched late last year on the British Library, which I was trying to wait out, but which is still affecting this hallowed institution. But we'll come to all of that shortly in The Search for Spratt. Better. Damn. It's been a busy time for the podcast. Early this year, I was interviewed by the BBC for an online feature. The story finally appeared last weekend. In fact, it spent pretty much all of Saturday on the BBC homepage, leading to a surge of new listeners. As a result, and as I speak, according to Chartable, the industry podcast chart, I'm currently the number one most downloaded documentary podcast in the UK, fifth in society and culture, and 21st overall.
Excellent.
Hell, I even broke America. Well, tickled the eastern seaboard. But it was all a wonderful surprise. Another outcome of this rise in numbers has been more people reaching out. In particular, diagnosing from afar my father, from bipolar to psychopath. Unlike bipolarity and psychopathology, conjecture can be fun. But posthumously pathologizing my dad was something I was determined to steer clear of in the series. I'm not sure labels help, especially when you've got the time and space in a podcast such as this to trace and unpack someone's past, and are thus better able to understand them as individuals and their subsequent behaviors and choices, rather than simply attaching a label to them. Before we get on to You Know Who... Oh, come on, I didn't even say it! I should tell you that the next bonus episode promises to be a real humdinger and a genuine coup. Two huge literary figures, titans even, both of whom knew my dad professionally to varying degrees, in a three-way conversation with me about father-son memoirs. Because both have written them. One had his made into a celebrated British film, whilst the other is a truly legendary playwright. Watch this space.
Watch out!
Watch out! Watch out!
Lastly, in the previous episode, I promised a deeper dive into my dad's relationship with, and diary entries about, Susan Russell, my father's doomed lover, featured in episode 3.
Anyone privileged to observe this room would see a strange scene. Sue pacing, picking things up and putting them down, each wearing one sock.
I still plan to run this, but in a later episode now, because I think it's time. Don't you? If you've come this far, the name Sprat will be familiar to you. Sprat emerged late on, in the final episode in fact, after I realised that based on one particular diary excerpt, references to Sprat coincided with my dad's time in Basra, Iraq. Specifically, the tiny outpost of At Tanuma, where he was stationed.
My loss of judgment at Tanuma was almost as though I had been smoking or eating ganja. I wouldn't put that past Sprat at that.
And that the haunting figure of Sprat may have been the source of my father's disgrace. In many ways, Sprat is the pivotal, albeit silent figure in this entire story. His fate correlates to my dad's state of mind at the time. The specifics and context of what befell Sprat, a window into his psychological condition, and most likely, the answer to the riddle of that moment in Iraq. Here are a few excerpts to help jog your memory.
The bull rage that I felt with Sprat, that I never want to feel again. But it was the rage of the Celadang, the Malayan bison, that holds its head high, that calculates and bides its time while the wound festers, not the turf-pouring head-down charge of the farm Hereford. It is that element of calculation in it that shames me and makes it murder. I should have hit him with an oar at midday. The instinct to break cover, to shout, "Here I am," in order to avoid the terrible moment of discovery, the pounce that Adam felt among the leafage. Hence, Iraq. My father. Perhaps I owe him for the fact that Iraq was not a final disgrace. Sprat. Sprat. On the wooden causeway. On the wooden causeway. I am faced with the law if I tell the truth. But I am past the obligations of art. It is a battle for a moment of the attention of the conscience of the world. I must show in my novel how, after Iraq, it was only the reflex action of the back-broken snake, and how Iraq was inevitable from what went before. More than any other in my life, I have been the prisoner of two events. Striking a pregnant Joan, and that moment in Iraq. And there is an interconnection. At least the guilt of one hampered my maintaining my innocence, come what may, in the other.
And one final diary excerpt, not previously included.
Without the hostility of Sprat, all might have been well, and how inevitable, and yet perfunctory, it seems.
Perfunctory, an action carried out without real interest, feeling, or effort. The word is clearly used here to contrast with the seriousness of the deed, and makes me more convinced than ever that poor Sprat met his end, directly or otherwise, at my father's hands. Soon after the release of the previous bonus episode, I visited the British Library to begin the search in earnest, but was told that many of the online resources and databases which would aid this search were still unavailable due to the cyber attack which took place in late October and from which the library is still reeling. So I thought I'd bide my time and give it time to reconstitute, and returned at the end of March.
Hi. I'm hoping to track down someone who was in the Indian Army during World War II, and all I have to go on is a surname.
Was he an officer?
It's not clear. The surname I have is Sprat. I found three Sprats in your three reference books. I don't think you have war records for any of them, but they were located in a particular area in Iraq at the same time as my father, because he mentions this name, Sprat, in his diaries. And something terrible befell Sprat at my father's hands.
Oh, dear. Was it in the Indian Army, not the British Army in India?
It's not entirely clear, but it depends.
We don't have British Army records, you see.
OK. Well, as far as I know, because my father was in the Indian Army, so therefore I'm guessing that he would have been...
The other thing I should say is with World War II people, quite a few of the files are closed because of data security.
Also, how has the cyber attack affected my possible research in this area?
I was saying that with the closed files, officers, they were listed on a database which we can't access.
Okay.
And I don't know whether they can retrieve those files.
Notwithstanding the recent cyber attack, the challenges at hand are many and varied. The first is that whilst according to the Indian Army reference lists, there are 3 Sprats contemporary to my father. I said in episode 6 that there were 2, but I subsequently found one more. As you may recall, no one by the name of Sprat has a war file that I can pick over. Besides, none are in the same regiment, and very likely not coinciding with my dad, though you can't easily cross-reference by location. Also, the lists only provide information on officers, or those above second lieutenant. Ordinary soldiers, in inverted commas, are not cited. So Sprat could have been a soldier, though I dare say the officer class and working soldiers didn't often fraternise. But here's another kicker. The British Army and the Indian Army would often join forces, sharing locations and duties. So Sprat may not be a member of the Indian Army at all. Or Sprat might be a nickname. Or 1,000 other things. But we have to start somewhere.
Doing it by where they were, you can't really do it like that in the Indian Army records.
Right.
I think you might be able to do that with British Army records, but I'm not an expert on British Army records.
And where do I access British Army records if it's not here?
The MOD.
Okay. And that would include officers and non-officers?
Yes, and you'd have to have the name of the person. And
I've only got a surname.
Yeah. It's a paid service, so it's usually for relatives, you see.
Whilst I was there, I also saw someone I've spoken with before at great length.
Hello.
Yeah, I've come back. We spoke before. How you doing?
An archivist with extraordinary expertise in tracking down people based on the thinnest of details. This person didn't want their voice on the podcast, but offered up plenty of ideas as to how I might approach my search, including a trawl of the Commonwealth War Graves website, and in particular, findmypast.com, an online resource for which the British Library's membership was compromised by the attack, but that I was able to sign up to at home with a free 7-day trial.
findmypast.com. Start your free trial. Yes, UK site. I don't know about you, I always feel slightly wretched when I start a free trial and cancel it almost immediately, but I guess these companies make their money from those that forget, or of course those that intend to continue. Suggest strong password. I now need to cancel this account. I'll do that not on your time. Let me do some digging. Search all records. Births, deaths, first name, last name, Sprat. When? 1945, give or take 2 years. Don't know year of birth. Where? Doesn't say Iraq, just overseas as an option. Births, deaths and marriages, military and armed forces conflict. Subcategory. The Boer Wars. Nope. I need optional keywords. Here we go. Basra. Tanuma. Basra. Sprat. Nothing coming up. Let's go back. Sprat. Overseas.
The search for Sprat was always going to be a long shot. My thinking all along had been to try and isolate 2 to 3 likely-looking Sprats, find out where they died or were buried, track down next of kin, and quite simply ask if the name Christopher Wordsworth meant anything to them in relation to their father or uncle or grandfather. But then I tried some earlier dates.
Is no records found? Oh, hold on. 2 records. Yeah, they're both from 1942. Okay. So that, I think, is what the lady at the British Library flagged up to me, that she'd researched after I'd last been in and had found on her records. Okay. Year of death.
There is one Sprat listed on Find My Past, which shows up as two records. William Sprat died 16th of October 1942, but he's buried in Baghdad, some 530 kilometres away, and a full 2 years before my dad was demoted as officer and apparently shipped at speed out of Iraq. It suddenly felt all so improbable that I was on a wild goose chase, woefully ill-equipped for the task at hand, and frankly, pissing in the wind. But I decided to revisit my dad's war record and check out the dates. The chief problem remained. Almost all of it is in his own handwriting, something that the lady at the British Library described as dodgy, the fact that he's written it, not the handwriting itself. I did find a few morsels I'd not spotted before. For example, that he had what he calls infectious hepatitis during the war, along with a reference to cerebral fluid, which I can't properly make out. But also, in tiny letters, I noticed for the first time that my dad originally disembarks Paphos in April 1943. Paphos, you may recall, is the Persia and Iraq force. Previously, I'd only spotted my dad disembarking Paphos in late 1944, and at the same time relinquishing his post as officer. So it seems he was there previously. And although I had assumed that his losing his officer status was related to whatever happened that moment in Iraq, and that it had taken him 2 or 3 years of service to reach the end of his tether, the point of no return, and perpetrate some kind of terrible deed, the fact that he may have been in Iraq as early as 1942 means I need to open up my research. After all, he didn't write to his wife for nearly 3 years. Perhaps he was in a stricken state after whatever happened, and only began to come back to life at the end of the war. I then visited the Commonwealth War Graves site, which is frankly where I probably should have started. 40 Sprats recorded as casualties during World War II. The only one commemorated in Iraq is the same Sprat, William Sprat, aged 23, Royal Army Service Corps, 7th Tank Transporter Regiment, son of James and Margaret Sprat of Plaistow, Essex. The personal inscription on the grave reads, "He died alone, no cheering hand nor word of comfort from his native land." Could this be the Sprat in question? Just because someone died in Iraq wouldn't necessarily mean they're buried there. But it's fairly likely. This was always going to be a challenge, but we're underway and I'm planning further research. In the wake of the BBC feature, many more people are engaging with the podcast. Perhaps there's a Sprat relative amongst them, or a Sprat connection. And something will emerge, or I'll stumble across the answer. Perhaps I already have. Before we go, a couple of tidbits. Three of my Wordsworth cousins recently took a trip up to Tea Keeper, the run-down, remote, exposed cottage where my dad lived on his own, up in the Midnight Hills in Snowdonia, in the late 50s and early 60s. As featured in episode 4.
Coming up onto the Midnight on a night of stars with a few black smudges of cloud. Sudden, short, and savage shivers. The vixen screaming insistently in the distance. Dry, horrific yells. As though the darkness itself were being disemboweled.
To get a sense of just how exposed, here's the audio from the video my first cousin once removed, Alex Wordsworth, sent me.
Well, we've arrived, and it's windy.
Ooh, it's cold.
The view's good. Can you even hear us? Send help! 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 Help!
Lastly, a file I came across the other day from 2019. My voice deliberately warped, playing with the idea of turning the diaries into something. I think you'll agree when I say it's a good job that I got my friend, actor and voice of my father, Chris Porter, on board.
Often, we adopt a cause for reasons that underlie our consciousness. A man whose end is approaching may set his affairs in order, revisit friends, patch up old quarrels, live incontinence, or alternatively snatch at love, without knowing that he will be dead in a few weeks. So I believe much that I have done has been part of a design. I base myself when younger on so much that...
The next bonus episode will either be the literary titan father-son memoir discussion or The Search for Spratt, part two. You'll find a link to the BBC piece in the show notes. To play out, here's a track from my forthcoming album, Hope Isn't a Strategy, scheduled to drop in the coming weeks. Actually, let's say months.
I'm not afraid of you. I'm not afraid of you.
Why not?
Devil in the Wilderness is written and produced by me, Saul Wordsworth.
Shock the world.
Original music from the series, such as this track, is also by me and is available on Spotify. Links in the show notes.
I've stood here before, grasped for breath in shallow water.
The voice of my father is performed by Chris Porter. The executive producer is Paul Kobrak.
I'm aching for something real.
Thanks for listening.
Traces of you in everything. I will not beg for mercy. I see you so clearly now, my love. Watery eyes and ley lines. You shift beneath me and I feel the earth shake. A force to move mountains. Repetitive dreams.
Dark room.
You're still dreaming.
Prepare yourself. They are close. They are coming. They are here.
A ray of moonlight touched the buckle of a belt hung over the back of a chair, touched the core of a book on the table, touched the back of a mirror on the dressing table. The fucking train! You probably can't hear it. Anyway, fuck it.